Hello, this is the Trimmed Down podcast version of Tracks of My Life with me, Toby Davey. To catch all my guests' music tracks in full, do listen in to the hour-long version on RNIB Connect Radio every Tuesday at 7 p.m, repeated Thursdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 8 p.m. Hello, I'm Toby Davey and you're listening to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio. In Tracks of My Life, we invite a guest to select a few tracks that mean something to them and mark moments in their life. From maybe that first track they ever heard, right through to one track that they would like to pass on that might give hope for the future. My guest this week is BBC journalist and audio producer Emma Tracy. Hello Emma, and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Emma, was it a bit of a tricky task just selecting seven tracks then?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. I could have probably chosen 17 tracks, to be honest. And I tried to go for the right sort of combination, but who knows how everyone will see it and see me after this, to be honest.
Well, we're going to start with a track from Christy Moore, one of your dad's favourite artists, and a track called The Knock Song, all about the building of an airport for the Knock Shrine. I think your dad had a Christy Moore track on cassette and it played so many times in the car. And I wondered, could you take me back to those early car journeys and life for you back then and what life was really like?
Yeah, well, my dad died 11 years ago and he was my biggest fan. He absolutely was on my side, even whether I was right or whether I was wrong. And we also had a very similar sense of humour and had an awful lot of fun together. And when I see my kids now and the antics they get up to, I think that my dad would have just absolutely loved that. So there's a lot of silliness and a lot of humour. And at that time, I suppose, I don't know what age I was, maybe 10 or maybe a bit older, there was a very, very, very popular album in Ireland called Christy Moore Live at The Point. And The Point was a big venue, that probably Ireland's biggest venue, indoor venue at the time. It's called the O2 now, I think, or something like that. But yeah, so it was Christy Moore Live and it was a mixture of really nice ballads and fun songs. And he Christy Moore is just the most amazing performer of songs and chooser of songs. So, you know, he writes a lot of songs, but he sings a lot of other people's songs. And I do believe this is one he wrote himself. And I suppose it's kind of just an example of the comedy in Christy Moore's writing and then the fun in his voice. But it also captures a moment in Ireland and is really funny, really, if you're an Irish person at that time, because like one of my family's trips was to the Knock Shrine, and that was, I've been there, a number of times as a small child and just to think about how it came to be and how an industry was built around a priest's good idea. It's really amusing. And there's a few other songs. There's one about Christy Moore, coming off the drink, which is another really great one. But on that album, there's Ride On, which is every time an Irish child learned the guitar back in the 80s and 90s, that was the song that we learned because it was a few chords. And it's just iconic, really, for my childhood in Ireland. I mean, there's so many other songs I could have picked I Should Be So Lucky by Kylie Minogue, my first concert, or could have picked lots of other stuff, but that's sort of captures quite a number of things in one.
And I think one of the last gigs you went to with your dad was to see Christy Moore in Hammersmith, which must have been a great memory and treasure for you. And I wondered, how was Christy Moore on that night and did he play the Knock Song?
I can't remember if he played the Knock Song. You know, Christy Moore is famously grumpy in terms of, like, if you get too raucous at his gigs when he's singing a song that he feels is important or needs attention, he will tell you to stop. And that happened that night, which I just loved being there because I've heard it on the album and I've known it from other things, but being in the room when he's telling you to stop clapping and stop singing is great fun. And it just sang some beautiful songs that night, and he sang a song called Bee's Wing, which I'd never heard before and which I absolutely love now. It's a really lovely ballad. And my dad had such a good time, and we went to the pub after. And my dad was well. My dad was sick for a couple of years before he died, and I can't remember whether it was before he got sick that we went to the concert, or whether he was between, you know, in between being sick. But we just had a great, great time, and I was living in West London at the time, so it was really local to me. And it was one of those nights that you never forget, really.
Begad, says Jim, 'tis 80 years since Mary was a dowt. 'Tis time for another miracle, and he blew the candle out. Up from Fatima to Bethlehem, from Lourdes to Kilchamock, there's never been a miracle like the airport up in Knock.
So the Knock song there by Christy Moore, and wonderful memories for you, Emma, of going to see Christy Moore with your dad.
Yeah.
We're now going to come to teenage life for you. And as you say, time at a Blindy boarding school.
Blindy. Blindy.
Oh, okay. Well, we called it Blindy when I was...
Oh, did you? Yeah. Oh, okay. Phonetic. Yeah, I get it. No, I would have always said Blindy, but there you go. The different blindness communities have different ways of talking about things.
Well, it may have been that my Blindy school was in England and not in Ireland.
Yeah.
What was life like at Blindy boarding school for you then?
Oh, it was like a different world. We lived in a convent with a nun over us and lay people as our kind of care staff and lay teachers, but a nun as principal. And we were all thrown together. And the only thing we had in common was that we were blind or visually impaired. I was very, very lucky. I went home every weekend, so I wasn't there all term, and I made some really, 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 really good friends there. And I was there till I was about 14 or 15. I have a terrible memory, so excuse my vagueness. A friend of mine, Dolores, who was losing her hearing as well as her eyesight, lent me The Bends by Radiohead. And one of the big, Toby, you probably know this as well, one of the big features of Blindy boarding school was the Walkman, or the radio, or the tape recorder that you listen to in bed at night or wherever you could, and recorded each other on and all that. And it was a must have for us. So I just used to go around with this thing. I just listened over and over and over and over again to the album on my Walkman until it basically, because she'd made a copy for me. So until it unraveled, basically. And it was the first time I really consciously appreciated music, I think, where I was like, wow, that arrangement. I didn't have the words, I suppose, for it, but the arrangement is amazing, and the sort of the words, the lyrics are amazing, and the collection of songs go to work together really nicely. And, you know, who are these people? I need to know more about them. So that, I suppose. But then, you know, Radiohead were slightly on the fringes of the kind of Britpop thing, they'd like to say, very much on the fringes. But, you know, what came from that was like Oasis and Blur and all those people. And they were a huge, you know, Oasis was one of my first teenage concerts and stuff. So that, it felt like that was kind of the gateway to all that for me.
And Fake Plastic Trees is a track that I think you learned to play on the guitar when you were a teenager. And I wondered if you can possibly play that track now or not.
No, do you know what's interesting? We're doing some work on our house and we've had to empty our attic. And I have a guitar, but I haven't played it in years, because although I sing a lot, I just can't play an instrument. And I've tried to play a lot of different instruments, and I did try and learn the guitar. But like for the first time ever this evening, the kids took out my guitar because they saw somebody else's at the weekend and started strumming it. And they were, you know, they're 6 and 3 and they were getting a garage band up on the iPad, which is like a music making piece of software. And I just was like, this is amazing. I need to leave. The guitar had been in the attic. I just need to leave it around and see will they pick it up. So it was amazing for me. I can play nothing, but it would be like every parent the world over. I'm like, I think my kids might be geniuses, and I'd like them to continue on that journey. So, you know, it's just ironic that actually this evening is when they took out the guitar that I used to play many, many years ago.
The green plastic watering can for a fake Chinese rubber plant and a fake plastic girl.
Fake Plastic Trees there by Radiohead from an album that takes you back to teenage life, Emma. For your next track, Emma, we are come to time during your late teens and into your early 20s, and also time when you entered talent shows as well. I wondered what were those talent shows like, and do you think that going up on stage for those talent shows helped you with your chosen career in broadcasting at all?
Oh, the talent shows were just the most fun. They were in small country pubs, and they were very packed pubs when it came to the finals. My family loved it. My brother said he was going to be my manager. My dad was beside himself when I would win. And it just was good fun. I left Blindy boarding school and went to mainstream school. And, you know, no offense to anybody who was at the Blindy boarding school. And I, as I say, I made a lot of friends there and you know, was well looked after there. But I had the best 3 years of my life, I think, that so far, because I just went out every weekend and had great fun, and that was part of that. I think I was about 16 when I did the talent competitions, and then the song I think you're going for next is Runaway by the Corrs. Is that right?
It is right. Yes.
Yeah. So that ended up being my sort of 4 a.m. song, or one of them. You know, where, you know, in Ireland we have fantastic sing songs. Mm. You know, every time we get a chance, not to be too stereotypical about it, but that was one of my songs because I sort of had a similar tone to Andrea. I don't think I have the same looks, but and it just sort of suited me really, and I enjoyed singing it. Yeah, so it just became one of the songs, one of my go-tos, because for a singer, I know the words to very few songs and I struggle to retain lyrics. So this was one I knew. So when I sing a song once, if I need to learn it, I'll sing it 50 times.
Did you have dreams of becoming a singer or songwriter at all back then?
You know what? I hid my singing for a long time and wouldn't. Everyone wanted me to sing and I wouldn't. And then I did the talent competitions and got money out of it. So that made me happy. And then, you know, people enjoyed it at 4 a.m. in the morning. But anybody who can do a thing maybe thinks slightly of making their fortune from it or being famous, but not really. I mean, I've always known I can use my voice, and that's one of the things that's helped me into the career that I'm in now. But I don't think singing was ever going to be a career. I did do some wedding singing. Myself and my friend Pat used to do church part of Catholic weddings when I was sort of in my late teens and early 20s while I went into university and before I moved to London. So I did do that. But no, I don't think I ever thought I was going to be on Top of the Pops or anything.
Why did you, for your talent shows, choose Runaway as your chosen track by the Corrs?
Because it was a popular song that everybody knew. It was a song I knew the words to. It's a song that suited my voice. And most people or backing bands or guitarists or whatever could pick it up pretty easily. And I knew which key I sang it in. But don't ask me now, I've forgotten. But yeah, so that's pretty much why. But I still love the song now, and I still enjoy the Corrs. And the Corrs was one of my great teenage gigs as well, in a really local nightclub to us. So I have really nice memories of them. And yeah, I still really enjoy it. It's a great pop song.
Runaway by the Corrs there, and a track that you played at talent shows, Emma, there. Now we come to a track that marks the time when you met your husband, Robin. And I wondered, how did you and Robin first meet?
We met through friends, and it was a while. It took a while to get going. But we've been together for 16 years now, so we must be doing all right.
And I think Robin introduced you to Scottish music. And I wondered if there was any rivalry at all between the Irish and Scottish music between the both of you. And did you realise that there were similarities in both Irish and Scottish music?
Well, there are tons of similarities. And one of the big things is that the country gets behind a song and runs with it. So like the Knock song or whatever, you know, Sunshine on Leith, or I would walk 500 miles by the Proclaimers, like the whole country will sing that at you. And that's what I really, really love. To be honest, me and Robin have very different tastes in music, actually. And I think if he was into the Irish music, we'd have had very different tastes as well. So he likes, he's probably more dancey, I'm probably more rock. But yeah, like me with the Irish artists, he's very keen on Scottish artists. And we spent a lot of time showing each other different music. But we, one of the big things we have in common is sort of folk music now. I probably wasn't into that in my early 20s, but it's something we've kind of grown with together.
And the Proclaimers track that you have chosen is Sunshine on Leaf, and one from that film as well. And I wondered why this one and maybe not one of her other tracks.
I chose Sunshine on Leaf because it's about Edinburgh. Well, it's you know, Leaf is in Edinburgh. It's about whatever you want it to be about, I think. It's a brilliant song. It's so emotional. The guys sing it so brilliantly. It's got a great arrangement and it's just a really lovely, lovely song. And I definitely only heard it after I met Robin, because the only one by the Proclaimers I would have ever known was 500 Miles. So I got introduced to all these great songs. And this one, we moved to Edinburgh, or Fife we moved to, but just across the water from Edinburgh 6 years ago. And it's my home now. I've just been to Ireland and that's my home too. And it always will be. But we love it here. And this sort of represents that. So we had lots of Proclaimer songs at our wedding, and then we went to see Sunshine on Leith. It just happened to be in the cinema when we went to stay in a lighthouse on the South Downs, and we went to the nearest cinema to see Sunshine on Leith, and that's what we did one of the nights of our little honeymoon break.
For Proclaimers and Sunshine on Leaf, and what a great track too, and a wonderful, you know, duo as well. Now we come to a track that marks a few moments for you, Emma, one that you danced to at your wedding, but also one that marks the time when you were writing Braille pen pal letters to your friend Ellie.
Yeah.
Who you've been able to continue your contact with her, and she's become a great friend for you.
Yeah.
When did you start writing Braille pen pal letters to Ellie, and how were you able to keep that sort of contact up with her?
Well, we actually met in real life at an R&IB vacation scheme when we were maybe 13, and we got on a house on fire from the moment we met, and were immediately inseparable. And then we wrote to each other, and then 2 years later we went again to another R&IB vacation scheme and had another fantastic time together. So we wrote again after that, and then we lost a bit of contact just when we were busy at university. And then when I moved to London, she was also in London, so we got back in touch, and we've been really good friends since. And we, now that we live in Scotland, we meet her quite regularly. Either they come to us or we come to them. So this song, it just brought back that memory, because there was a radio station called Atlantic 252 on long wave in the old analog radio days. And it was a pop station that everybody, you know, if you couldn't get any other radio station, you could get Atlantic 252, a really strong signal. And but the, you know, the quality was obviously awful because it was long wave, but you just had it on if you had the radio outside in the sunshine, or and it just played all the hits. And it was just an easy thing to listen to, and you just all the same songs all the time. And one was Kiss from a Rose. And just when I chose that one, I was kind of trying to think of songs that meant stuff to me. And Kiss from a Rose is one that me and Robin really, really love, both of us. It's a great, great pop song. So nice harmonies and lovely tune and all that. But it just brought back that memory of sitting in my room brailing out in the Perkins and then rolling it up. And I can still remember her address and everything, won't give it out now, but you know, rolling them up and putting them into a tube and getting my mom or my dad to address them, and then being so excited when another one came, you know, a few weeks later, or could have been a few months later, but they were so long. We wrote pages and pages. I'd love to read them now. I don't even know if I still have them, but yeah, that it just, when I was thinking, I thought about it for our first dance at our wedding, but actually that was then what it brought to be after that.
And do you think writing those Braille pen pal letters helped with your career as well, you know, sort of letter writing and blog writing and journal writing? Because I think kids these days, you know, they're into the WhatsApping and messaging and everything else, and they don't really spend time to write.
You know what? Yeah, do you know what? I think more than that, it really cemented my blind identity, or started me on the road to my disabled identity and my identity as blind, you know, being blind, being part of my identity, because I had this other person in my life who was living quite a similar life to me, a blind person in a mainstream school, which wasn't that common, was becoming more common then, and you know, going out and all the trials and tribulations of going out at night when you can't see and trying to sort of maintain a social presence and try and keep up with everybody in the fashion and all that kind of stuff. And we just talked, you know, she was someone I could really, really talk to about all those teenage things, but from a blindness perspective. And that was, I valued that so much. And, you know, there were no holds barred and we just wrote everything. And I think it was more of a stream of consciousness. I don't think it would win any essay awards, to be honest. But it was, yeah. And, you know, I think letters were different to talking on the phone. We did talk on the phone sometimes, but I think we both found it a nice activity to sit down and write the, type the letters. And it was something that I never, like, I don't think I've typed a Braille letter to anybody else, maybe a couple to my friends in blinding school over the summer. But by far, these were the ones I wrote. And because I have no patience, and, you know, I wouldn't be a letter writer now. I'm more of an audio person, but it was just something we did.
Did you know that when it snows, my eyes become large and the light that you shine can't be seen? Baby, I can bring you to a kiss from a rose on the grave.
Seal there and A Kiss from a Rose, and what a wonderful track too. Emma, we now come to a comedy track, and I think one that you and the rest of your family love too. And as you said earlier on, your dad was a great fan of the comedy song too.
Yeah.
And I wondered what makes a good comedy song for you and your family?
I think it has to be very relatable. Lots of wordplay and tone. The tone has to be right. And in John Shuttleworth's songs, it's not just about the song, but it's also about what he's doing on his keyboard. So there are lots of like little flourishes. He uses a sort of a kid's old style keyboard, and there's lots of different noises on it and stuff, and that massively adds to the comedy. But yeah, I think they're all the things. And a good melody that you can keep singing and singing and singing and singing and singing, and it never gets old.
And I think the John Shuttleworth track that you've chosen has a really good message for people about, and I won't go back to Savory, which it's quite...
It's called I Can't Go Back to Savory Now. And it's about John and his wife, Mary. And I won't keep doing the accent, but Mary makes shepherd's pie for tea, and his daughter Karen doesn't finish hers, and he can't decide whether to eat hers or whether to go on to his dessert, because he's really keen on the dessert that Mary's made. And next thing he knows that Karen's food is being scraped into the dog dish, and he's just very sad because he didn't get to eat it. And it's just really silly. I mean, I'm sure there's a very kind of deep message underneath it, but it's just so silly. And I just, you know, in life now, if someone does offer me something savory after I've had something sweet, I will always say I can't go back to savory now. And, you know, it just is a silly song. And I love a lot of John Shuttleworth songs, like Two Margarines on the Go is another favorite. And Mutiny Over the Bounty, which is all about bounty bars and the fact that they used to have cardboard underneath them and now they don't.
Yes.
Yeah. Very, very big deal in John's life. But John Shuttleworth is what would you say, a character made by Graham Fellows and created by Graham Fellows. And there's lots of sort of radio programs with him, and you kind of get into his whole family situation with his kids Darren and Karen, and his manager Ken Worthington, and it's just a silly thing, and it just makes us laugh. And it's very English. And I don't, you know, I suppose it might be surprising that we find it so hilarious, but it just, he is so talented. And I met him once after a gig. We've been to a few John Shuttleworth gigs. And I said to him, "Oh gosh, you're taller than you sound," which is like the most blinding thing you could ever say to somebody, I think. And then I just sort of ran away after that.
Because if I'd known that, I wouldn't have started my sweets. But I can't go back to savoury now. That shepherd's pie was stunning, but I'm halfway through my pudding.
I can't go back to savoury there by John Shuttleworth. And I think something we should all possibly learn by as well. Emma, we now come to your final track, the one that I think you might like to maybe pass on to your children, perhaps. And I wondered, what is the track and why have you chosen it?
It's called The Baby's Done a Poo, and it's a kid's song by Nick Cope, who used to be in a rock band back in the 90s and 2000s. And now he has a show on CBeebies, which is the BBC TV station for TV channel for small people. It's just catchy. Again, it's really relatable. You know, babies poo and that's it. And little boys, I've got two little boys and they really like talking about poo. So it suits them really well. And we've actually just been through toilet training and a very long spell of toilet training. So it sort of spoke to us in that way as well. And I love all of Nick Cope's songs. There's some great messages in them. There's one about a hedgehog and our boys love sort of the natural world and animals and stuff. And then there's one about, you know, plastic in the sea. And then there's one about, you know, why do you have to be so grumpy about everything? Why not just live and let live? And then there's one about a rock hopper penguin with one wing and that doesn't stop her doing anything. And it's just, there's loads of great messages. There's lovely tunes. He's good fun. And my boy, my youngest, who loves sort of YouTube Kids and is all into sort of toys and really modern, and this CBeebies show is very old style, where it's like Nick Cope with his whippet and just sort of talking to kids and singing songs, and it just absolutely he just stands and looks at it and then sings along and dances, and it totally grabs his attention for the whole time it's on, which is exceptional. And we love a lot of the songs, but this one just probably is the top one. And there's a bit where it says, "And Dad, Mum looked at Dad and Dad looked at Mum. He said, don't look at me. I did the last one," in terms of talking about a nappy change. And that basically, we've said that a lot to each other over the years. So it's just of a time, you know, we just have small children and they like talking about poo, and we've had to think a lot about it over the last few years. And I suppose, you know, if I was listening to this in 10 years time, I'd be like, what were you thinking? But at the moment, it just is something that we, you know, we put on the smart speaker all the time and we listen to a lot and we really enjoy.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Emma Tracy, for sharing your tracks of my life with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Mum said, "What could it be?" So I pointed to the passenger next to me and said, "The baby's done a poo, the baby's done a poo. It's not a big surprise, 'cause that's what babies do. But this was not just your regular pebbly one. Oh no, something really bad just came out of his body.